podcasting to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. You are now listening to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and with me in the cave this week is everybody's favorite co-host,
Daphne J.
Daphne J, how's it going, girl?
In the house.
In the house? What you doing in the house?
Doing my hair. This is what you call a...
multitask?
Yeah.
Multi-podcast. What's shaking, Daff J? What's new and exciting in your world? Talk to the people.
I finished a book. Sort of.
Okay. How have you sort of finished the book, and what's the book?
Well, so it's like year three on Malcolm X, right? I'm on the last chapter. He's gone to Mecca. He's seen the light. You know, hurrah Allah. And, you know, he's not all white people are the devil anymore.
For the record, this isn't a religious podcast or a pro-nation of Islam or anything like
it's
that.
It's just a narration of where I'm at right now. And so what happened was I was at the back of the book and I'm like, okay, like I know what's going to happen soon. And there seems to be so many more pages left. So I'm like, how much more of this do I have left? And it turns out that at the end of his autobiography is an epilogue from Alex Haley.
Yeah.
In which he goes into detail about his experience with Malcolm X while writing this autobiography. So it's a lot of him recollecting certain discussions and events. For example, when he kind of noticed that Malcolm X would doodle on napkins while they would just have conversations depending on his mood, and he picked up on this, and it wasn't just doodling like shapes or just stuff. He was actually like writing down words and expressions, things that he was feeling at the time, and so he kind of picked up on it. So he came prepared and would bring napkins on purpose, the author, Alex, and he would serve him a hot beverage and kind of like slide over a pen, just leave it there nonchalantly, so that as if to kind of prompting this thing that Malcolm X was doing.
Did he say what he would doodle?
Yeah.
What yeah, would he would.
Words.
Okay.
Again, like I said, emotions that he was feeling at that moment, he would write it over and over again. Mm. And then what ended up happening is that the author, at the end of their interview or their discussions, he would keep everything. So to this day, he still has these things that he would collect over time over their discussions together.
Little mementos.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that to you from now on when we podcast. I'm going to slide you some paper, some crayons, pen, see what you come up with. So you have read a legitimate book that has significance in civil rights, American civil rights history. I've read a bunch of comic books that may have to do with Captain America and Civil War. Not quite as poignant, but still, in this day and age, when we're considering that Civil War is now a movie about to drop, and along with that, and doodling, another comic book film is going to be released in less than a month. Batman v Superman. The anticipation level at this point, Daph J, where are you at?
I'm nervous. At first, if I recall, I was very angry. I was excited, and then I was angry, and then I was nervous, and then I was excited again, and then I was, and now I was, then I...
Just a mix of emotions. You don't know where you find yourself.
Yeah, currently, I want to go, and I want to be content.
How are you feeling with how much they're showing in the trailers and TV spots and all that kind of thing? Are you feeling that they're showing you too much? Is it making you get amped up to see the rest of those scenes? Like, whoa, what's your approach to that sort of thing?
I'm a little bit in the middle. I feel like, all right, there's too much that's being shown, and you're almost trying to oversell something. But then at the same time, you know when there's a bad movie, but they just keep showing the same trailer over and over and over again?
Okay.
I don't find that this is happening with this. I'm seeing things that I've never seen before.
Okay.
Experiencing different, like even the simple fact that they, one night you and I were watching TV, and then they played this commercial, and it looked like a legitimate commercial about
airline commercial.
And then all of a sudden, you hear this familiar voice speaking, and then you talk about, I'm Bruce Wayne, and I'm like, huh? And then he's just walking out of the building, getting into the limo, and doing this promotion. And then it looked like a MasterCard commercial. Like, it was the...
Completely
and I'm like,
off.
Wait a minute. Does he really exist? Yeah. Like, I thought...
What Earth am I on? Am I on Earth 52 or something like that? Where I'm suddenly...
Was,
yeah.
I was, no, for a split second, I really thought I was like... I thought I was in the comic book. Like, I thought he was real for a split... Like, you know, for like... A split second, like a millisecond,
you
kind of like, you're
believe
like,
it.
Is this really happening right
now?
And I remember looking at you and I was just like, what? I'm like, wait, we gotta, is this a real airline? Like, we didn't know, like, I didn't know.
You're flying Turkish from now on.
But that I thought that was very, very cool. And I've only seen it the one time. I haven't seen it again.
No, yeah, me neither.
But I'm
but
also,
it's out there.
And I'm not the type to look for trailers. I don't. If I so happen to see it, it's because it's been brought to my attention. Like, I don't want to overdo it. I want to go in there kind of fresh and unexpected. Oh, somebody wants to play. Kobe just brought a ball. And yeah. Anyway, I just want it to be good. I want it to be all right.
I'm. It looks from the perspective of. Where Batman plays into this, it looks incredible. All the stuff that I see him in, it looks fantastic. It feels too dark for Superman to exist in this world. That's my only concern.
But you know what, though? At least, although it got a hating review, the Superman movie, at least this dark movie is consistent with the first one. Do you know what I mean?
They're sticking to
yeah,
a
they're
world.
Being true to their movie.
I guess.
And to the character that they're building in today's society. Like, it's not the you know, underwear over those tights Superman. It's not bright and let me get that cat out of a tree. Like, it's
but
not
don't you
Christopher
think it should
Reeve
have
Superman.
That brightness when it's Superman.
It probably should because it speaks to the character, but this is a new era. I think they're trying to make it more believable and realistic. Because in this day and age, I don't think there's anyone that would want to run around with these bright fluorescent colors to prove a point. I don't think superheroes are in this...
Thank you, Colby. Thank you. You can leave the room now. You give me your 2 piece.
Anyway, what was I saying? I don't even know anymore.
You're the fluorescence, the colors, the brightness. If they got a job to do, you don't feel like they need to be.
Yeah, I think today's criminals in the real world, they're horrific people, and I don't think any superhero would be able to conquer them with a wink and a smile. That doesn't work that way, and you need someone that kind of. You need someone like Batman who instills fear and means business. And like I said, I think there's a consistency in the story that they were told initially. And, you know, maybe it's a foreshadowing that right now this is a dark time for these two characters. But when they come together and become the friends that we know them to be and they become a team and the leadership that is bound to happen... Then maybe then we'll see some more light at the end of the tunnel. That's my interpretation of.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope that they have some more. I hope they start making it feel like the way DC Comics used to be, where each of their characters had a specific identity. Batman was the Dark Knight. Superman was the Man of Tomorrow, and his city was bright, and he operated oftentimes in the sunlight, whereas now I just feel like my concern is they're making everything so edgy and so real and so dark, and I think in the long term, if that's the approach they're going with, I don't think it's going to work like that, because they're not taking these characters each for what they are.
You know what? That's what I think a lot of people may have thought about Heath Ledger's Joker. We know Joker to be in this bright purple jacket with the green crazy hair and the red lips and this, you know, that flower that spits out acid, like, though that's the Joker we know and love. Mm-hmm. But, and then at first we're looking at Heath Ledger like, what is this? Like, it's unexpected. It was dark. He was nuts. But that's the Joker of today. That's the one to beat. And now there's another one where he's like, kill your mother, kill your father, you know. Joker.
Metal.
He's a completely different entity. And I just think that until we actually see it come into fruition, I hope we're pleasantly surprised.
I hope so too. I do. I really like all the things I've seen about Batman thus far and all of these trailers. I think Ben Affleck is going to kill it. He's looks great as Bruce Wayne. I even like Jeremy Irons as Alfred. And Alfred, who seems a little bit more involved and not so...
Well, even he looks edgy.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, just a snarky remark. He seems the kind of guy that... He actually looks like the Alfred that will slap Bruce for making a stupid statement or making a bad decision or... You know, because we know that Bruce has no limits. He doesn't think... He'll fight through the pain. He'll push himself. He'll hurt himself to get the job done. But this is the type of Alfred who seems the type that would stand up and be like, you need to stop.
Kind of like that, the Alfred in the Geoff Johns Batman Earth One books, where he has that tactical training and he's not just a butler, but he's almost like a James Bond in a previous life. Who's been given the guardianship of Bruce Wayne and raises him to be a little bit better than just...
Yeah, but doesn't hold back on the discipline when it needs to be rendered.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of cool.
I hope it, for their sake, I hope it turns out real well. But for this week, to stay in the topic of Superman and Batman, you want to tell them what we're going to discuss? What the book we chose this week would be to prepare ourselves for a little Superman-Batman movie action?
Well, following in line of what we're discussing, we thought we would take a gander at the Superman-Batman series, not to be confused with the current Batman-Superman series.
Very nice.
So this is written by Jeff Loeb, who I think is one of my favorite writers.
Very true. Yes, yes. Good right? memory. Yeah. Yes, yes.
The Ed McGuinness is also in here. McGuinness.
McGuinness. Ed McGuinness.
And Dexter Vines.
Yes.
Who I'm going to say is probably the inker.
What?
What? Am I right?
I think he's the inker or the colorist. But yeah, you're very good. Look at you paying attention to the detail. What does it say? Yeah, he's the inks. Dexter Vines on the inks.
Look at that. Honestly, I didn't even look at that. I just wild guessed there. And Public Enemies.
Which was also an animated feature for people who may have feel like, I've heard of this before. I thought this was an animated movie. You're right. It is. This was first published in October 2003. I remember buying this book as one of the first graphic novels when I started collecting comics again and getting back into the thick of things. This, along with Hush, and what else was part of that list? I think this, along with Hush, and then the next Superman-Batman, which was Supergirl, but the animated movie, people may know it as Apocalypse, were some of the first things I read. And...
Getting back into comics
and trying to play catch up and see where these characters are and what world they exist in. And I gotta tell you, reading this now again, I don't I, how much I liked it then and now, I'm still surprised that, for me, it holds up. How about for you?
Going back, the story is incredible. I really like it, and I can't wait to get into it. I had a hard time, though, getting past the Hubba Bubba drawings. I've been so immersed in the Jim Lee clean lines, everything sharp, everyone looking like, you know, that's just
kind of gritty.
Yeah. And this, I felt like I was reading just, you know, they look like bubblegum to me.
It's very
round.
Yeah.
And curvy and very comic book like, I suppose.
Very juvenile in a way.
Yes.
Like, kind of like you might open it up and be like, man, this is just strictly for kids. It kind of looks like a coloring book, perhaps, because it looks almost like they may or may not be telling jokes or cracking wise throughout the whole thing, because Ed McGuinness gained a lot of recognition for drawing Deadpool. And bringing that to a really high critical acclaim, his Deadpool run. And it was drawn similar to this. And Deadpool's a character where the whole thing is kind of tongue-in-cheek. So you look at this artwork and you're not sure that the story that you're reading, the artwork, is as serious as the actual story. But I still enjoyed it. I like the action scenes. I like that it's very comic booky and cinematic in the sense of, like, big punches and big muscles and... Not so much cinematic in the way that I would describe maybe some of the Marvel stuff that we read,
mm-hmm.
where the lines, like you said, are very clean and sharp looking, and, you know, everybody feels like if it was, it's like in 1080p almost.
Right.
This is very, it feels like an animated movie. Mm-hmm. It's like they're cartoonists.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Right? But I think that...
There's a charm behind
yes.
it. I appreciate that. I just think that as of late, my content in literature has been so, I don't know...
Diverse. Like, you've been reading a lot of different... Even you've been reading, like, Hawkeye from Marvel, which was a very different art style. Mm-hmm. Miss Marvel was a very different art style. So the range of what you've been... exposed to in the last year or so, when you go back to this, it's probably jarring for you to be like, man, why is this so, like, kiddie?
Right. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay. That's good. I'm happy I understand your position on how you viewed the art going back to it. I have a little bit of a... Before we get into the crux of the book and talk about the story and what we liked about it, this... Superman and Batman series harkens back to the camaraderie and friendship between Batman and Superman, which is how I prefer seeing them. I prefer seeing them as they were published for many, many years before The Dark Knight Returns, which was as best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone assumes or concludes that Batman Jimmy and Robin Olsen. Are best friends, and Superman and Jimmy Olsen are, you know, buddies. But at their own age level, if Batman's getting married or Superman would be getting married without having to give away their secret identities, if they had their choice, they would be each other's best man. That's the relationship they have. Would you agree with that, or am I overstating
it? I think... spiritually they would be.
Yes.
But I don't see Bruce doing that.
They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't, either of them would do it, because I think it would give too much of their relationship away.
Right.
But for those, like, let's say in the Justice League, they would all know, like, Clark's here and mm-hmm. he's standing there to let Bruce know that this is what he's thinking.
There is an understanding for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But not one that's promoted. Or advertised.
Right. Unless they're in their costumes.
Right.
Right? When they're Batman or when they're Clark and Bruce, there's a little bit of a... has to be a little bit of a separation. But The Dark Knight Returns is the first story where these guys are at odds, where they're fighting against each other, and everyone was kind of waiting to see a showdown between the two of them. And Frank Miller really took that time to paint Superman as a punk and as a government sycophant, a yes man who's just like Boy Scout, sanctimonious jerk, mm-hmm. right? And Batman's the one who's really, as much as he represents the 1%,
it was a very biased, I think.
Yeah, and he admitted that. He's like, I didn't like Superman. I wanted to present him this way. And I think because that story has had so much impact pop culturally or even within the comic book community, I think that's the one that people tend to refer to more. And I think that's, going back to what me and you were saying before about the Superman-Batman movie coming out, they're really leaning on the side of, let's make it the Dark Knight Returns type of inspired thing where they're kicking each other's butt. Let's put Batman in the suit of armor because that's become the most famous.
Well, conflict is interesting.
It is.
It's drama.
It is. But I feel like, to me, that's just one story, not even in real comic book continuity. That's like a one-off. This is how it could end in the future. Mm-hmm. But that's not, to me, when I think of Superman and Batman, I don't think of them at each other's throats, only to protect each other. That's mm-hmm. the only time they're at each other's throats, is in each other's protection, which I really like Jeff Loeb's interpretation myself personally, because you see the respect that these guys have for each other. Also, at the same time, recognizing their differences, but admiring each other for, you know, he does something that I could never do. Mm-hmm. And because I can never be like him, I have to do this. Mm-hmm. And I like how that's explored. And that's my preference, and I wish they were kind of going about it in the movies that way. Hopefully they do, like you said. If after this movie, maybe it will be like that. But I don't like seeing them constantly at each other's throats, presented like there's a fight between Superman and Batman. Because it's, I don't know. I feel like it's like a beaten horse. Mm-hmm. How about yourself? You've read Dark Knight Returns. You've enjoyed it. You've seen the movie. Now the movie's coming out, the new movie of Batman v Superman. What's your preference in their interaction or the way that they're written?
I particularly, obviously, I like reading anything with Batman in it. And when they're both together, both Batman and Superman, my interest is more so, I feel like I get to learn more about the characters that I like based on the thoughts of another character. And I really like how you can kind of get into Batman's head and his thoughts on Superman. And I really like how you understand Batman a little bit more when you think you can't get him. Mm-hmm. Clark does. Mm-hmm. And he paints a picture of this person that you didn't think could be that kind of individual. So I feel like when they're both in the same, in a story arc together, I find that I end up learning more about the individual. And that's why I appreciate, this was one of the first comic books that I started, that I read, that with them in it, and I appreciated that from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I thought that had a bit of a charm to it.
I remember when I was buying this, you were always saying, you got the latest one? You got the latest one? This was kind of your go-to book that you always wanted to get the next volume mm-hmm. and see where they were at. Even more so than just a solo Batman title. As much as you liked the solo ones, you enjoyed the team-up.
Yeah.
And seeing their universes not collide, but, you know, be in each other's worlds. So in this story, Public Enemies, which was also a DC animated feature, the first story arc is called The World's Finest, but it's also referred to as Public Enemies. And World's Finest is what the original Superman and Batman comic book title was called back in the days that they had like 400 issues for. And this was DC's attempt to bring that back. So in this story arc, there is a kryptonite asteroid headed for Earth. And the American government, which is headed by Lex Luthor, who is now the president, is thinking that it's a plot connected to Superman, an evil plot. Because it is coming to Earth because Superman is on Earth. So Luthor puts up a bounty of $1 billion to anyone who brings him in. So now superheroes and supervillains are all ready to attack and bring him in, with Batman standing at Superman's side to protect him and defend his cause. While this asteroid's coming in, Superman and Batman are fighting off all of these different villains and superheroes, and some superheroes who work for the American government, and they also have to come up with a plan of how they're going to stop this asteroid, because not even the government's nukes can do it. So that's the gist of the story. Do you want to get into some of the story points that you appreciated, some of the things that you liked between the interaction between the characters, or stuff you didn't like, for that matter?
Like I said, I like being in their heads, and I like that they have those bubbles that describe who's talking about who at that time, and it's obviously it's done on purpose, but it's almost like their thoughts of each other mirrored each other, even though they're very different people.
Yeah.
And their admiration for each other was very, very similar.
Yeah.
And their recollection of certain events, the way they remember it. Again, yes. Very different, but very much the same.
Yes.
And one of the ones that really, was actually the opening one, where it's presumed that there was a time that Bruce, at a very young age, would have come across in meeting Bruce. Clark says, "I still wonder if we should have asked him to play. It would have made a difference." And then Bruce says, "Sometimes I wish they had asked me to play, but by then my life had changed. I had no time for games." Mm-hmm. Like, they both thought kind of the same thing, but had their own feelings towards it.
I love that scene. It's for those who can't see the panels in the book, it's when it's telling a story of how Alfred and Bruce were driving cross country after his parents had died, and they stopped somewhere in Kansas and saw these two young boys playing baseball together, and it happened to be Clark and Pete Ross, and that was Bruce's memory of actually having seen Clark as a child, not knowing who either of them were. They both had that recollection of the same moment, but with different perspectives. And the art in that that portion of that small panel, it's Tim Sale's art.
Yeah, so, I was gonna say it's very It's very like Hulk gray, or yeah. Like Spider-Man blue.
Yeah.
Almost kind of like, not watercolor, but kind of like you can see the leaves, kind of like there's no exact figure, but you know exactly what the image is.
Yes.
It's not crisp, but it's really, it's a memory.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's a good, it's a good choice in illustration to show that this is taking place in the past.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a simpler time. It's it's got an innocence to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that portion of the book. And it kicks off the story as well. Throughout the entire series that Jeff Loeb is writing this, he does that thing, like you said, with the, not thought balloons, but the monologues on each side. Superman in yellow, Batman in dark blue. And both describing their stories of what they were going through and how opposite they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like Clark describes how his parents loved him, so they sent him to Earth to be found by people who would love him,
mm-hmm.
and teach him to be a good man. And on the other end, Bruce was, I don't remember verbatim, but I was, you know, I saw this happen before my eyes, and it, the people who loved me were taken from me in an mm-hmm. act of hate. So their way of getting to both of their points of wanting to fight for people and to protect people, one,
and what the outcome of their lives would be.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say Spider-Man, because Superman said that his future was in the great unknown. What? His future was in the great unknown. But Bruce's future, he said it was going black before my eyes. So they both were, like I said, going through the same thing, but having a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like how, again, when they're comparing their, I guess, their origin, their beginning, their life, when Superman now is amongst, when he first lands in Kansas, and he's kind of just naked. I guess it's a naked baby. But he's amongst these two people who are going to rear him, and is that the word?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to, you know, build his life up. But then the next panel over is the iconic, you know, Bruce's parents on the floor in a bloody mess, and he's in the middle of that. It's an exact
reverse.
Yeah.
It's a reverse. Yeah, the juxtaposition of both of them is like they're complete opposite, and one is proud to be, like, there's that shot of Superman flying over Metropolis, kind of like, I'm their hero, I'm their protector. And then on the other panel, you see Bruce, like, they don't even know if I'm real, they're all scared of me,
mm-hmm.
and that's how it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
But both, and as the stories go on and you go through the issues, as they encounter different scenarios, battles that they have to fight, decisions that they have to make, what goes on in their internal monologues of how each other is making a decision, there's this respect that they have for each other, but then also a concern, like, he's gonna do this now because he sees the best in everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce always says Clark always sees the best, and that was the touch that I think I like the most in Jeff Loeb's writing, is that they always refer to each other as Bruce or Clark.
All the time. Mm-hmm.
They never say, oh, Batman. Or like that. There's no disconnect. Because they know who they really are, they always refer. Even sometimes when they are in battle, they have to remember to not call each other by their actual names.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like the idea that Clark Kent is the person, or do you prefer it that Superman is who he is and Clark Kent is who he pretends to be? Because the way this is written, it's very much that Clark is who he is. Batman is who Bruce is, but Superman obviously knows the real Bruce Wayne, right? Not the one that is promoting Turkish Airlines. He knows the Bruce that's brooding in the cave and puts on the cowl. But do you like that, the way he presents them? Or do you like them kind of being, you know, you're Batman, I'm Superman, that's how we operate? Do you like them having that personal...
Yeah, of course.
This is the real person that you are?
Yeah.
Because some people prefer that Superman is who he is. You know, Clark Kent is who he pretends to be because he's an alien. That's what makes him... So here's my question. You take, for example, the Christopher Reeve's interpretation of Superman, where Superman and Kal-El is who he is and Clark Kent is the fake person who he's pretending to be to throw people off. But in this case, with Superman and Batman, it's evident that Batman knows Superman, quote-unquote, he knows the real person, the Clark Kent, the one who, he even says at some point in time within the story, he's more human than all of us. And then he goes up into the sky and starts shooting fire out of the skies, and we remember that he's a god. How do you prefer the interpretation of Superman? Do you like him as the alien, or do you like seeing him as Clark Kent, the man? Who can be Superman, who has the ability to be Superman.
I think I like seeing him as Clark Kal-El the alien, who has the capability of being a humble, lowly person. Because I think it takes more character and more strength for someone to feel, to have some kind of, to have knowledge of your superiority, but know to humble yourself and limit yourself on purpose for the good of other people.
Mm, okay.
And I think that's what makes why he is who he is, why he is such a good person and mm-hmm. a good superhero.
Mm-hmm.
That defines a person.
Okay. I'm always interested to hear people's takes on how they interpret or prefer to interpret some of these characters because they have that dual identity, dual persona. And in the case of somebody like Bruce Wayne, he puts on three different ones, right? The Justice League knows him as this fear-inducing vigilante. Alfred knows him for the real man that he is. And I think Clark does as well. But then he pretends to be that Bruce Wayne playboy to throw everybody off. But when I like this book because, like I said to you, Jeff Loeb really explores. It's almost like they know each other in a way that no other two people
mm-hmm.
know each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even sometimes Dick Grayson and the Robins are like, we were raised by this guy and we're around him so much. And in so many ways, we still don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
But in the respects of Superman and Batman's relationship, they kind of let a certain guard down with each other, or they have to expose themselves to each other in a way that no one else sees.
Right.
And I was just interested in seeing how you prefer that presentation of them. Because I kind of feel like when you make Superman out to be disconnected from people and make him like a too lonely and isolated, and yes, he has the Fortress of Solitude and all that kind of stuff. When you make him that alien who is just existing amongst people but can never have a relationship with him, I think you're taking away a great storytelling element
mm-hmm.
from him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for a long time, that's how he was.
Well, he becomes unrelatable.
Yeah. And I love stories where he's teamed up with someone. I prefer that because it allows him to bounce off conversation and his thoughts, and you get to see him express something about people.
Right.
Whereas when he's, for the way certain people write him, and when they take away the parents and when they don't allow him to be married, it's kind of like you're just making him be like this person nobody can relate to. And I think because he was raised by people with love, I think he could be one of the most relatable emotional characters.
Mm-hmm.
Even sometimes more than Batman, because Batman has this, because he was robbed of a childhood, he doesn't know how to express certain feelings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, what are some of your highlights within this story that stood out to you? Some of your favorite moments?
I like when Superman and Metallo go toe-to-toe.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we know that Metallo has the heart of Kryptonite.
Right.
So, he takes advantage of that, obviously, and basically cripples Superman's abilities to do anything, and hello, Batman to the rescue. But it isn't an easy, you know, as super as Superman is and as intelligent as Batman is, like, they are, I like how this story kind of paints the inadequacies of them.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to describe it.
But together, they can accomplish the impossible. So in this particular fight is when Metallo basically, you know, weakens, you know, Superman, and Batman can only do so much. And at this point, Metallo had put Kryptonite close to Clark's heart. And so he's weakening by the second.
Mm.
And then Metallo goes ahead and buries them alive.
Mm.
And at this point, they're still very true to the person that they are. You know, Bruce or Batman is very focused on the task at hand. But Clark is like very light. He's lighthearted. So that point where Bruce is trying to get stuff done, and saying, you know, I got to do this fast because it's close to your heart. I don't think I'm fast enough to get the bullet out before the wound closes up. In a very shaky voice, I keep confusing them. Superman says, "Where's the Flash when you need him?" And you can tell how unimpressed Batman is when he says, "Do me a favor, Clark. Lose the sense of humor." And then Superman's response is, "Do us both a favor, Bruce. Buy a sense of humor."
Yeah.
Like, he's like on his deathbed and he's trying to make light of the situation. And then Bruce is like getting frustrated with him because he's trying to get a job done. But, you know, and as incapable as Superman is at this point to use his powers to the maximum ability, in order to get out of that situation, they both put each other first,
mm-hmm.
and they put themselves in harm's way to help one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can see their when they end up in the sewer together, and then Batman he's wounded, and then Superman's falling, but they're both holding each other up, and they're having this, you know, just casual conversation, trying to keep each other alert.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. I think that's one of my favorite interactions of them. Nothing's necessarily going on. There's no major action. Major whatever, but it's all honest hearted dialogue between two friends.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That even in the animated movie, that's one of my favorite parts. Cause you see the motion of one picking the other guy mm-hmm. up after something happens. And they're both basically like at the end of the line.
Yeah.
There's not much more that either of them can take.
Yeah.
And just when everything's about to like hit the fan,
and you can see the genuineness in the animated movie and in the book, where when Superman gets weak or falls, Batman is very, "You can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You're the Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
This is gonna work."
Yes.
But when Batman falls or gets or reaches his limit, Superman's like, "Bruce, are you okay? Here, like, he's like, hold on to me. I'm going to help you. We're going to get through this." Like, there's an endearing part from Clark,
yeah.
but Bruce is very, like, soldier-like. Like, yeah. we're going to get this done.
He gives a motivational speech, and Clark is very in touch with the humanity of the limitations.
Yeah.
Which
I think, too, is a balance. Like, they balance each other out, because if you're one extreme over the other, you kind of lose yourself in that. If you're a suck, can't get you don't have the motivation, you don't have that fire. But then if you're always a drill sergeant, well, then you have no emotion and nothing to relate to.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another thing.
That's a great scene in the book and in the movie. There's a couple differences between the two. They're pretty true to each other. There's a couple differences. I think I prefer the book myself, but when it's adapted to a film, I understand why they didn't go the route that they did, that they didn't copy the book exactly, which I'm fine with. Well, I think
they can explore and I had the word in my mouth, but there's more that can be elaborated on paper, but when you're limited to time, you kind of have to run. And that's what I found at times in the animated movie. I'm like, oh, that was such a moment, and it's gone already.
Yeah.
But in the book, I feel like I can just like
pace it yourself.
They're having a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things that someone said, actually, that isn't not a value, but an advantage of the comic book medium, is that you can kind of pace what's happening yourself. Whereas TV, they're telling you, this is how fast it's being given to you, and now you got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this, you can sit on that portion of that dialogue between Bruce and Clark at any moment and really let it sink in at your own pace. One of the things I really liked about Jeff Loeb's Superman Batman run, he did about 25, 26 issues of it, which is, you know, roughly 2 years plus, is that it incorporated so much of the DC universe, and it really did. Within these six issues, you saw so many characters included.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people within the Superman books, a lot of people within the Batman books, like kind of the way he did with Hush, it's a greatest hits.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's used very...
It's like a Hall of Fame.
Yeah. and not overdone. Like, there isn't anybody that's overly done, but you got a little bit of exposure to all of these characters. You got to see...
But I found, too, though, even though they were characters that we knew, they weren't being told in the same fashion.
Because of the circumstance,
exactly. Right? So one of the examples I can come up with was when all of a sudden Solomon Grundy...
Yeah.
He had more than two words to say. Yeah. It's like, wait, what's happening here? So although some characters were revisited or were reoccurring is the word,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't repetitive of themselves. It was a new take on the characters, which at first it's like, oh wow, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
Like, what's happening? And this is new.
Yeah.
This is unheard of. This has never happened before. But then when you start piecing together as to why there's all these differences, it's like, oh, what a good way to put in a twist.
Right. Was, I like that.
I thought it was intelligently done.
And there's never a bad moment to include a Superman and Captain Marvel showdown, because that's probably the closest thing that Superman can get to matching himself, if not somebody who could take him out. I even think Superman says, you know, if we're gonna go pound for pound here, he'll probably take me because magic is his power base, and that's one of Superman's weaknesses, along with kryptonite, which I always found interesting. But seeing Hawkman and Captain Marvel face off against Batman and Superman, and seeing how they had to switch who they fought with for different reasons strategically was really cool, and I liked how that was written. You've got Power Girl in this, who is... Power Girl is basically Kara from another Earth, and she's stuck in this particular Earth of DC. She doesn't know how she got there or where she's actually from, but she knows that there's a connection with her and Superman, which is discussed in this a little bit. Seeing the force that works for the government, the squad of superheroes that are actually trying to take Superman in, is really interesting. I think there was one portion here where I thought there was just a little bit too much of the fight scenes, where they just kept going on and on and on, and it was just like a battle royale of there's one issue that was just a battle royale of the fight scene, which I thought was a little bit
overkill.
too overkill, but I guess that was their way of including as many characters as they could. That was kind of my one gripe with this. I'm like, okay, it's more than just them facing off against a cool matchup. They're just throwing everything at them. I love seeing Crypto come through and have a little part to play. And of course, Nightwing and the Bat Family are break into the White House to give Bruce a way in on the blind side. This scene here where Luther confronts Captain Marvel and asks him if he's brought Superman in, and it turns out that it is Superman in the Captain Marvel suit. I thought that was clever the first time I read it. They actually made a toy of that.
Really?
Yeah, of Captain Marvel suit, but it's ripped open and you see the Superman.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Hey, you have that Lex Luthor.
I do. I don't have this particular one because this was a huge Lex Luthor. It came, like, I didn't know at the time where to put it, but I have a Lex Luthor like this. And what's cool about this particular run is that they brought back a lot of stuff from the pre-crisis age of DC, where Lex Luthor had, like, he was a super scientist and was more super villain as opposed to Donald Trump. And it's interesting, when they rebooted Superman back in the 80s, they said, we don't want to make him this crazy scientist who keeps getting caught and he wears this green suit and all this jazz, right? Let's make him, what would he be in the real world? So they actually modeled that Lex Luthor to be more of a Donald Trump character. And it's kind of funny because this Lex Luthor becomes president of the United States. And in real life,
Donald Trump's a candidate for presidency.
It's kind of, yeah, like real life and art are kind of
imitating
each other a little too closely, and it's kind of freaking me out. Because every time I read this, I'm like, man, this is Lex Luthor being president is like Donald Trump being president. And it could happen right now, which freaks me out. So ultimately, the way that they resolve the issue of this huge meteor coming to Earth is they go see a 13-year-old boy, which is the Toy Man. Not the Toy Man that is Superman's villain, but he's named the Toy Man because he is a 13-year-old uber genius who is extremely quick at inventing things, and he comes up with a composite Superman android slash spaceship that has the capability to destroy this asteroid, this kryptonite asteroid coming to Earth, which was extremely cheesy and campy, but still visually cool.
But you know, it's interesting how they incorporated the fact that this was basically a child.
Yeah.
So, as campy as it was the depth and imagination of a kid that came up with this concept. So, of course, it would be an emulation of his favorite superheroes.
Yeah.
And then falls in continuity of who really saves the day.
Yeah. No, that's the thing.
It was clever. Exactly.
It was clever. It was fun. It was, it's not something that you look at and you take like extremely seriously. It's meant to be fun. It has its moments of seriousness. It has its dialogue where the characters are exploring themselves and what drives them and the respect they have. But then at the end, it's all fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's meant to be, you know, just a big bag of fun and adventure and sci-fi silliness. I like this a lot because it includes all the things I like about comic books. It has Superman, Batman, which is number one, but the representation of the DC universe, it has a little bit of cosmic elements to it. Time travel, where Superman from the future comes back to warn himself not to make the mistake, because it could end up being all of his fault. So that thread of warning goes throughout the story, because Batman and Superman are constantly like, is this what we're not supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Is this what Clark is? Is it because he feels this way that's going to lead him to do this? Like, Batman constantly trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. That's the Superman Batman Public Enemies. If you really want to have a good time reading a fun, happier version of Superman and Batman where they're friends and they team up, read this or watch the animated movie. What would you recommend if you were to tell someone?
I think it depends on the person. For me, I really did enjoy reading it. Because like I said, I think there's certain limitations or certain things that aren't explored fully in the movie, but you can kind of pace yourself in with the book. But if you are the type that, you know, you don't really want to invest that time in, you know, dissecting what, you know, trying to get the characters, trying to understand where they're coming from, but you want to kind of just cannonball in one time and then
that's a good way to do it.
I think the animated series is an easy in.
Funny you say that. DC is releasing now for all their animated movies, they're putting together a set that's the comic and the movie combined. You buy them together for like $30 or something like that, so you get the graphic novel and the movie that goes along with it set. Yeah.
So, question, are the people that do the drawing and the inking, are they also like, is the art that's in the comic book also going to be the same art in the movie? Like, would it be the same?
It's the existing movie. So what already has been released as Public Enemies, they've made it like a combo pack. So this is the movie that you've...
So only existing seen. Movies, not anything...
Yes.
Oh, okay, I understand. I thought it was going forward, that's what they were going
to... No, do. Public Enemies is being re-released as you can buy the book and the movie together.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So what do we have to get? We have them all.
Okay. And the books we're that go with behind. Them. We're not behind, yeah. No, yeah. We're good. But it's kind of cool that they decided to do that. I'm like, oh yeah, sure, now they do that. Right? Why didn't they make this an option when they were coming out? But that's okay. What do you want to read next? Because there's one thing within this story arc that's missing.
Are you quizzing me again?
I'm not quizzing you. I thought you were going to finish my sentence. So you have all the DCU in this book except one.
Oh yeah, Wonder Woman.
Yeah. So the Batman v Superman movie, it's going to have all of them playing some type of a role. We don't exactly know how they're interacting with each other. So we got to get into something that includes the three of them next. What direction do you want to take it? Do you want to stick with Superman and Batman series and just read the next volume, which would be Supergirl / Apocalypse? Or do you want to go another route and do like the first interaction with Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman?
Which is even if we were to do the Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman is introduced in the Supergirl.
Yes, she is.
So
that's what I'm saying.
And she takes the role of, because she knows them. So it makes sense, I guess, to go Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman storyline first.
The Trinity?
Mm-hmm.
Not the Supergirl.
Trinity.
From Matt Wagner.
Yeah.
All right. So that's next on the docket.
Okay.
We got a couple weeks before this movie comes out.
Okay.
So we gotta buckle down. And we gotta get these podcasts in. And get ourselves amped up, and get the listeners amped up for those diehard fans that are sticking with us in the Cave of Solitude here. Thank you everybody for listening to our Superman Batman Public Enemies. We're highly anticipating this upcoming year of comic book movies that are coming out. It seems like, I don't know if it's me, but I feel like this year is the one that has the most films, comic book related films coming out. It's almost like every 2 months you've got something.
Mm-hmm.
After Superman, Batman, which is the next one that you're looking forward to the
most? Civil War.
Civil War? Not Suicide Squad.
No.
Batman's in that.
I know. Batman was here when they made that.
He was.
But, yeah, I'm really, really excited for Civil War. It was I think it was my first Marvel book to have ever read. It was a great read, and I remember having heated emotions and expressions at the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was a red letter event.
Yeah.
You read that Marvel book, and it was an impactful book. It was one of the... Yes,
it really was.
Yeah.
It was not at all what I expected. Awesome. So I'm really looking forward to the movie.
Okay, sounds good. So tune in next time. We will be talking about The Trinity by Matt Wagner, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. We're continuing the theme. You can reach us at caveofsolitude.com or write us a letter.
Sorry.
is that the bell telling us we're out of time?
No, that was my gin and tonic ice cube.
Right into the microphone. You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Thanks again, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Read a book.